Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Robert Siegel, and this is On Point.
The idea that we are somehow a national security threat to the United States is quite frankly insulting and unacceptable.
That is Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau speaking on NBC's Meet the Press over the weekend. He was responding to the Trump administration's recent imposition of tariffs on Canadian metal imports for national security reasons. This comes ahead of the G7 summit at the end of the week, when the world's top economic powers will convene in Quebec. How does it all look to one of America's closest neighbors and allies? This hour, On Point, the view from Canada. You can join us on air or online. Are you Canadian? How do you feel about Trump's tariffs on your country? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. And before we get started, a word about something that happened here yesterday. In our first hour, a caller from New Mexico misrepresented his comment to our call screener. That was off air. And then once on air, made anti-Semitic remarks. The call was immediately dismissed. We apologize to anyone who was offended by our handling of that call. And now, to discuss Canada, joining me from Washington first is Heather Long, who is an economics correspondent for the Washington Post. You can find a link to her article headlined, "Trump Thinks He's Saving Trade, the Rest of the World Thinks He's Blowing It Up." It's at our website, onpointradio.org. Heather, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Robert. Great to be here.
And joining us from Toronto is Nathan Jansen. He is a senior economist at the Royal Bank of Canada. Nathan, welcome to the program.
Hi, Robert. Robert, thanks for having me.
First, Heather, Donald Trump has invoked national security reasons for the tariffs on Canadian steel and aluminum. Can you run through that reasoning a bit for us?
Sure. So this is really the first use we've seen since the 1990s when we signed all of these various agreements around the world of the national security argument in such a big way here, particularly against Canada. And what the Trump administration is saying is that Canada is America's number one market for steel imports. So we get the most steel and aluminum from our Canadian neighbors. And the United States, the Trump administration argues, look, our domestic steel industry and aluminum industry in the United States could be a lot stronger. We've lost jobs over the years. We've lost market share. And part of that is because we're importing too much steel from around the world. So it's really an economic security argument rather than a military argument here. The other thing that they're saying, I really pressed Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross about this on a phone call last week. I said, wait a minute, you know, we're very, just what Trudeau was saying, we're very close allies with Canada on a military front and just about every other front. Why are we hurting our allies when the real problem is supposedly too much aluminum and steel from China that's flooding the market?
What did he say to you?
That's right. The Trump administration says, and what Ross said is, look, we don't import in the United States a lot of metal directly from China. But that metal from China, they argue, is going to Europe and going to Canada and going to other places around the world and then entering the United States, what they call transshipment. So maybe some of that raw metal goes to Canada, Canada tweaks it a little bit and then sends it across the border, and it looks like a Canadian metal, even though the United States is arguing most of that metal is really coming from China.
President Trump's problems with Canada when it comes to trade aren't only about metals. He reiterated his America First message. He does so often, speaking, calling out Canada back in April of last year. This is what he said in Kenosha, Wisconsin.
We're also going to stand up for our dairy farmers in Wisconsin. And I've been reading about it. And I've been talking about it for a long time, and that demands really immediately fair trade with all of our trading partners, and that includes Canada.
Do American dairy farmers have a big problem with Canada?
Well, I would say both countries make arguments that the other side is subsidizing their agricultural programs too much. Technically, that's not supposed to happen in free trade, that we're having government subsidies of industries. We're supposed to be able to let competition rule. And so, you know, there's been a bit of a debate over the years. And when it comes to U.S. agricultural exports with both Canada and Europe, there's also what you call non-tariff barriers. So sometimes you have these situations where these other governments argue, and from time to time, Canada's made the argument that the quality of certain U.S. products isn't up to par, that there's something wrong. So these types of disputes have been going on for years between the two countries.
Yes, they have been going on for years. So is it fair to call what's happening right now, the level of conflict, is it fair to call it a trade war?
It's fair to call it a trade spat. We're not quite at the level of war. From a big, big picture perspective here, what's going on, the United States has put about $17, $18 billion worth of tariffs on Canada. Canada has retaliated with about the similar amount. So we're talking about, let's say, $20 billion or $40 billion worth of tariffs that are flying between these two countries. You know, the U.S. economy is a $19 trillion economy. So this is still very drop in the bucket in the big picture perspective. It's not going to totally shake these two economies, not going to cause them to go into a recession.
Let's turn to Nathan Jansen, our economist at Royal Bank of Canada, north of the border, joining us from Toronto. How big a deal does it look like from Canada? Is it a bigger proportion of the Canadian economy that might be at stake?
Yeah, I mean it is, but I think the conclusion that Heather had, you know, talking about total trade flows and total size of the economy in the U.S. also still generally applies to Canada. So if you look at the Canadian exports to the U.S. that have been targeted, it's about $16.6 billion. It's only about 3% of Canadian exports. If you look at the steel and aluminum sectors together, they account for about 0.5% of Canadian GDP and jobs in total. So it's our total trade flows are smaller, so it's a larger relative hit in Canada, but still generally small in the big scheme of things.
The Canadians drew up a list of items to increase tariffs on American items, and it's a very detailed list. It includes lots of metal products, but also household goods. I think my favorite is it specifies coffee roasted, not decaffeinated. are we your only source of decaf? Is that the strategic commodity that you can't put a tariff on?
Yeah, I would assume so. We all just really like our decaf coffee up in Canada. Maybe everybody else. I like mine caffeinated. It's quite a dog's breakfast of stuff that's been targeted. And generally, I mean, without having really looked into a lot of the details of it, typically the response in a trade spat like this is to target products that might have, the most political impact, particularly for House of Representatives and Senate leadership.
So Senator Mitch McConnell, being from Kentucky, that might account for one of the reasons why whiskey is on the list.
Yeah. And I mean, orange juice, another one, maybe targeting Florida, which was a swing state in the last presidential election.
So the Canadians in a case like this would logically sit down, look at the political map of the United States, figure out who might get hurt by tariffs they would slap on, and target very, very directly.
Yeah, and I think you have to do that. We often think of an import tariff as a tax on another country, but the fact is, import tariffs are paid by your own domestic consumers and producers. So there's an element of this that's, the U.S. slaps on import tariffs on all of these different products. And it hasn't been just steel and aluminum in Canada's case. There's also been, softwood lumber, newsprint, earlier tariffs on planes from Bombardier. Typically, what those have done is raised prices in the U.S. So in a sense, it's the U.S., raising prices for your own producers and consumers, and then when Canada reciprocates in kind, the political forces here have to be kind of cognizant that, you know, that's also going to have an impact on domestic consumer and consumers and producers, the prices that we all have to pay. So you have to be strategic in picking which products will do the maximum amount of political benefit.
You know, I called out especially to Canadians who are listening who might have something to say about this. And while our first caller, Scott, is calling from Stephen City, Virginia. Scott, you're a Canadian. Is that right?
Hi, Robert. Yes, I am, sir. I'm also a long-haul truck driver. I have seen it from both sides. And quite frankly, the U.S. has knocked on Canada's door several times over the past 100 years to work out a free trade agreement. We've said no. Finally, we said yes. EU created their own bloc. There was other blocs being created. We had to create free trade. There's no choice. It is a global marketplace now. I'm a long-haul truck driver. I know this for a fact. You start imposing knee-jerk reaction tariffs, and I do mean that seriously because that's the way your president is. Mm-hmm. He's very knee-jerk reaction. He's done this because he said, in quotes, I'm going to rip it down. I'm going to make a new free trade agreement no matter what happens. And he's done this out of his policies, so-called policies, from his election campaign. It's insane to think it's going to help. It's going to hurt everything. You can't compete that way in the world. Look at the way the EU's reacted to it and Canada's reacted to it and everything. You can't work that way anymore. It's very, very old school and outdated.
Well, I'd like to ask Nathan Jansen whether what we're hearing from Scott is typical of what you're hearing in Toronto. Is the attitude that the U.S. has led a free trade organization in North America, and now it's kicking Canada in the shins? Is that a view you hear?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a view that we hear, and they're not huge measures to date, but they're definitely an irritant and potentially of larger concern if you work specifically in one of the industries impacted. But historically, there's been a lot more support for free trade and open trade in Canada.
Right. Well, we are discussing the Trump administration's tariffs on Canadian imports. I'm Robert Siegel, and this is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message come from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Chances are you're confident when it comes to your work, your hobbies, and your life. Rocket Mortgage gives you that same level of confidence when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. Rocket Mortgage is simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLS ConsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
What does it take to start something from nothing? And what does it take to actually build it? I'm Guy Raz. Every week on How I Built This, I speak with founders behind some of the most inspiring companies in the world. Find it on NPR One or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Robert Siegel, and we're talking about the view from Canada after the Trump administration's tariffs on Canadian imports and ahead of the G7 summit in Quebec at the end of the week. You can join the conversation. What do you make of Trump's tariffs on Canadian imports, and how will they affect the U.S. economy or the global economy? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guests are Heather Long, economics correspondent for The Washington Post, and Nathan Jansen, senior economist at the Royal Bank of Canada. Heather, I'd like to ask you, we've already heard arguments against raising tariffs and the problem with raising tariffs and how there are benefits to more trade. These are not novel ideas. They've been dominant in Washington for a long time. How does the Trump administration argue against so many years of consensus on the move toward free trade?
That's a great question. And certainly this is a big friction between President Trump and the rest of the Republican Party, which tends to be very pro-free trade and particularly very pro-NAFTA. And the last caller, the truck driver, was really speaking to how important the NAFTA negotiations are that are underway between the United States, Canada, and Mexico. And President Trump continues to threaten to pull out of that. Just this morning, he had a bunch of his deputies, well, Larry Kudlow on TV on Tuesday morning saying that the president's preference now, and he asked me to convey this, is to actually negotiate with Mexico and Canada separately. Which doesn't sound good for the future of NAFTA. But the reason that President Trump says he wants to do this, and he's been consistent on this, he said it almost exactly 2 years ago on the campaign trail in my home state of Pennsylvania when he did his big manufacturing speech, and that is he believes that while trade overall helps many people and helps a lot of businesses, it has hurt a number of people acutely in the United States, particularly in the manufacturing sector, with losses of millions of jobs in this country and good paying jobs that are usually union wages.
In fact, we have a comment, Nathan Jansen, on our website from listener D. Cato, who writes, counter to what the corporate media is raging about, Trump has a political winner in this debate. For too long, a small elite segment of America has profited off globalization while outsourcing and the race to the bottom have accelerated. Is there a similar sentiment in Canada?
I think that there's less of that sentiment in Canada. I think maybe it may just be a function of trade being a lot more important to the Canadian economy than it is to the U.S. So exports are around 30% of our GDP compared to about, you know, a little over 10% for the U.S. But Canadians, I think, in general are more open to trade and kind of get the idea of, you know, everybody benefiting from more trade. And more so, I think, than in the U.S. There is, you know, we definitely have a sense that, you know, there is this political benefit in the U.S. to be had from ramping up anti-trade rhetoric. The issue when you get into areas, you know, the U.S. Midwest, heavy manufacturing sectors, and, you know, the same in Canada, in, say, Ontario, southern Ontario here, is that, you know, we've had, you know, in the auto sector, we have free trade dating back to 1965 between Canada and the U.S. And these production chains have become so integrated that, you know, it's impossible to unfry an egg. And so, you know, if you I've heard, I believe Paul Krugman was the one who used the quote that, you know, ripping up trade agreements now, even if you believe that globalization was the main thing that has hurt manufacturing in the U.S. and in Canada, ripping up free trade agreements now is essentially the equivalent to, you know, first having driven over, you know, the manufacturing sector, and now you're backing back up over them again. It'll just hurt them again.
Talking about unfrying the egg and how closely intertwined the U.S. and Canadian economies are, we're going to turn to Jeremy, who's calling in, not from Canada, but it sounds like awfully close to Canada. Do I have that right?
Yeah, absolutely, Robert. I live about a mile from the Canadian border. That would be behind my house in the woods. I live in northern Maine. And everything in our economy up here on these border towns in northern Maine relies on friendship and partnership with Canada. Every day, I work at a large international shipping company. I'm a supervisor, and I work alongside Canadian citizens who work with me in my position. And I just think that this, what President Trump is doing with so many things, but it's particularly towards Canada, in kind of creating this kind of a hostile, confrontational approach, is just going to hurt everything that we do up here in northern Maine. I think it's a very, very poor choice. We should be looking towards more partnership, more friendship, more trade, and less of this confrontational style.
Jeremy, thanks for calling. And Canada's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Chrystia Freeland, told CNN State of the Nation on Sunday that the Trump administration's new tariffs on steel and aluminum mark a sad time for relations between the U.S. and Canada.
I would just say to all of Canada's American friends, and there are so many, seriously, do you really believe that Canada that your NATO allies represent a national security threat to you? And that's why the Prime Minister said it is, frankly, insulting.
Insulting? Is it also injurious? Well, we're going to bring in another voice into our conversation now. Joining us from Washington via Skype is Daniel Dale. He is the Washington bureau chief for the Toronto Star, and you can find a link to his coverage of Trump's tariffs on Canada at our website, onpointradio.org. Daniel, welcome to On Point. It's good to talk with you.
Thank you.
Canada is not the first country we think of when we think of tensions between Washington and foreign powers. How bad is this? How does this rank in the recent history of U.S.-Canadian relations?
You know, a lot of people call it a low point. I don't know if that is necessarily true. I think during the Obama era and the era of Conservative Prime Minister Stephen Harper, there was a lot of acrimony, largely over the Keystone Pipeline, which Obama was very hesitant to approve and then eventually rejected, and Harper made basically his top diplomatic priority. They also had ideological differences. And we still see a relatively warm personal relationship between Trudeau and Trump, even though they are very different. You know, one young liberal multilateralist, one, you know, an older conservative America First nationalist. But in terms of trade, I think this is the worst it has been probably in a number of decades. There has been the ongoing softwood lumber dispute, for example, but nothing this emotional and that involves, you know, comments from the two leaders themselves.
I mean, are those, I'm wondering, I think Stephen Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, reacting to those comments, said something to the effect, well, these tariffs are, you know, this is a negotiation. This is a family spat here, and we're starting the bidding at 25% and 10% tariffs on these metals. Did the Canadians come back just as hard as they were hit? Or did they come back harder by raising the issue of our boys who fought alongside you in world wars?
Well, they did. They, in terms of the substantive response, they did, in their view, they did not escalate. They announced what they said were dollar for dollar tariffs. So, you know, as much a tariff as you put on us, we're going to put on you, no more. So they say that they're not escalating that way. But they did escalate the emotional tenor of this. You know, when these tariffs were announced on Canada and Mexico, Trump did not say anything. It was done via a Wilbur Ross conference call and then, you know, written documents.
The Commerce Secretary.
Yes. And then Prime Minister Trudeau came out and said, you know, this is an affront to the Canadian soldiers who fought and died with American soldiers on the beaches of Normandy and, you know, in Afghanistan after 9/11. So the way that the Canadian side is responding, you know, they are not treating it as a mere, you know, family squabble.
Is Justin Trudeau doing well with the Canadian public in his response to this so far?
Robert, I don't actually know. You know, I haven't seen any polling on this. I suspect that his tone of outrage does capture the sentiment of a significant percentage of the Canadian public, but I can't be certain.
Well, let's turn now to John, who is actually our second trucker on the program. Do I have that right, John?
Yes. Hi, Robert. How are you doing?
Fine, thanks. And you're calling from London, Ontario.
Yes, I'm near London. I spent years hauling steel and aluminum from Canada, both Ontario and Quebec, into the U.S., and I can tell you that we're not transshipping Chinese steel. It's a matter of geography and geology. We have the ore in Ontario to make the steel. Our steel mills are running full tilt, and we have the bauxite in Quebec making the aluminum. And it's not Chinese product we're bringing across the border. It's Canadian product. So I think Trump's team is highly misinformed about where the source of the metals coming across the border are from regarding Canada. Yeah. I can't speak for other countries.
No, go ahead.
You know, as far as his target seems to be China, but he's missing the target.
Well, I'd like
spent
to
years in the United States as a heavy haul trucker. With a U.S. work visa, training American guys to haul the really big superloads, taking things out of American and Canadian factories to ports in the U.S. to be shipped to China. And almost without exception, every plant manager or foreman or factory owner that I spoke to, some of these loads took 6 months just to plan the move. Every one of them was saying that it was American companies like Walmart and other large retailers who were forcing them to move their factories to China to take advantage of the cheap labor market. And so as far as I'm concerned, you know, targeting Canadians is the wrong thing to do. It's an American-made problem.
Well, I want to put this to Nathan Jansen for a moment, our economist from the Royal Bank of Canada, who's joining us from Toronto. First of all, some questions about the steel economy. Is it fair to say that, first of all, there's just too much steel being produced in the world right now?
I mean, I think that has been a, you know, it's been a problem that, people have been talking about. I mean, U.S. Steel capacity utilization has been higher in the past. So there's some evidence that, you know, U.S. Steel producers aren't producing as much as they could, but they've kind of been low for you know, more than the last decade. So it's certainly not a new problem. On the whether Canada is a part of the problem, I mean, John's point was a great one, and we're scratching our heads about it too. You know, the U.S. is a net exporter of steel to both Canada and Mexico. So, you know, in terms of these transnational shipments, I think there could be just as much of an argument, if there is one, that the transnational steel is shipping, you know, through the U.S. and into Canada and Mexico as much as the other way around.
Heather Long of the Washington Post, give us a sense. Do you get a feeling that the Trump administration feels that it's winning this? That is, after all, I don't think it was high on the Canadian agenda to rewrite the terms of trade for North America until Donald Trump was elected. Have they scored one just by forcing this to be the conversation?
That's a great question. From what we can tell, from what we're hearing from senior administration officials, they do think that they are gaining an upper hand on NAFTA. So if you read these latest tariffs on steel and aluminum as just another way to pressure the Canadians to the table on NAFTA, I mean, we haven't seen any results yet, but there's a feeling in the Trump administration that that's winning. I do think the last caller's point was spot on. And from the big picture perspective on trade, just about everyone in the United States and beyond agrees with President Trump that China has not been playing fairly. And from a big picture strategy perspective, what's bizarre about this now trade spat with Canada is you would think that President Trump would want to go for the big fish, would want to go after China full throttle, and he would want Canada standing beside him as he did that. And it seems like that is a lot less likely now.
Daniel Dale, there's going to be a G7 summit in Quebec at the end of the week. Do you think that other countries will take Canada's side or be intimidated by the U.S. policy toward Canada? Any sense at all of what might happen there?
Well, I think it's certain that they will take Canada's side because we got a hint of their plans at the pre-summit summit of finance leaders from those countries that concluded with a highly unusual statement in which six of the seven finance ministers issued a unanimous statement, of course, unanimous excluding the U.S., in which they expressed their, you know, profound dismay, disappointment to the U.S. They asked their colleague, Steven Mnuchin, to, you know, return to Washington and convey that sentiment to his political masters. And so this, you know, people who covered G7 say that these summits never end with statements that harsh, that statements that single out one particular country. We don't know the extent to which this will dominate the summit. We know that there will be some difficult conversations. You know, there is often a desire among Trudeau and other leaders to, you know, compartmentalize and focus on the areas on which they can cooperate and agree rather than letting this take over the whole thing. But we know that it will be more acrimonious than these events usually are.
You're a Canadian journalist covering Donald Trump, covering Washington. One of our listeners wrote at the website, NSTEF, this is, wrote, Trump thinks he's doing a business deal and he's playing hardball to see if the other guy caves in. In his limited understanding of diplomacy, he thinks he can force his will because he thinks he has all the cards. You think that's a good reading of President Trump?
I think it probably is. You know, he sees foreign relations as transactional, and he views his counterpart as the other side. You know, it seems like as he views the other side in a real estate deal, you know, so he doesn't think about long-term ramifications or broader strategic goals. He thinks about winning the individual interaction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a lot of people involved in foreign affairs say that that's not a good way of looking at it. And I think even if he's looking at winning this particular interaction, it seems like he may not have considered the impact that these tariffs may have on Trudeau's ability to sell any future trade deal to the public. You know, now Trump has got the Canadian public riled up in sort of an angry mood. So I don't know how this will play in the end.
Nathan Jansen, are Canadians getting used to this?
I mean, I think unfortunately we are. We have seen this pattern, and you know, you start to suspect that it's in part just negotiating tactic, but really, you know, ramping up rhetoric, ramping up bluster, and then easing off. So we had it in late April, where the tone on NAFTA negotiations improved dramatically. Now it's gotten a little bit worse again, and so you know, you start to think that this is you start to get a little bit, you know, numb to it. It still is an irritant to everybody, but it's a pattern that we've heard before.
Nathan Jansen, senior economist at the Royal Bank of Canada. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Ron.
Heather Long and Daniel Dale, stick with us. We're discussing U.S.-Canada relations ahead of the G7 summit in Quebec. I'm Robert Siegel, and this is On Point.
Ever get to Friday, look back on the week, and say to yourself, what just happened? I'm Sam Sanders. Check out my podcast, It's Been a Minute, where every Friday we catch up on the news and the culture of the week and try to make sense of it all. Listen on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcast.
This is On Point. I'm Robert Siegel, and we're talking about the view from Canada after tariffs imposed by the Trump administration and looking ahead to the G7 summit in Quebec at the end of the week. You can join the conversation. What do you think we can expect from that summit? Will any progress be made? Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. My guests are Daniel Dale, who is Washington Bureau Chief for the Toronto Star, and Heather Long, economics correspondent for the Washington Post. And we have been hearing from you online. First, on Twitter, Gary Schott writes, is Trump's ego involved here? His thinking, anything negotiated by a predecessor is obviously inferior. And from our website, a listener, our contributor, Hammerman, writes, Canada, Mexico, and the world should sanction or close Trump properties, not America. Trump is not America. Daniel Dale, let me ask you about the notion that if the deal was negotiated by a predecessor, Donald Trump thinks it's by definition a bad deal. He could do it better. What do you think of that interpretation?
Well, I think there is something to that, and we see that in particular with deals negotiated by Barack Obama. But I think it goes beyond that. If you go back to interviews that Trump gave in the 1980s, he sounded very much like a protectionist even then, striking the same themes about America being ripped off, taken advantage of. He was pro-tariff then. So I think this goes well beyond Obama, and it's beyond mere ego or vindictiveness.
Heather Long, how do you read Donald Trump's approach to these questions?
I think Daniel made a lot of good points. I would just add that the other thing President Trump consistently talks about is trade deficit. So when he looks at this as a win-loss situation, he thinks that the U.S. is getting ripped off because we in the United States are buying more stuff from other countries than we are selling to them. But where it's particularly interesting with Canada is the United States last year actually ran a slight trade surplus. So we you know, technically won by Donald Trump's definition against the Canadians last year.
You know, a lot of the tariffs that the Canadians have imposed counter to the U.S. tariffs target, as we've heard, places, specific areas, including Ohio and Michigan and Pennsylvania, states of the upper Midwest and Northeast where Donald Trump won, where he did very well. And there's some, as we've heard, there's some political content to that. I'm just curious, Daniel Dale, if you could give us some Canadian context for this. Across the border in Ontario, across the border in Hamilton or wherever, or in the auto producing or assembling or parts producing plants, has there also been an industrial hollowing out over this time? That is, do Canadian industrial workers share a similar experience with those of workers in Ohio or Michigan?
Yeah, I there has certainly been a similar hollowing out. And there was some good journalism during the last Canadian or after Trump's election. There was some good journalism that mirrored the journalism that American reporters had done, you know, in so-called Trump country and the, you know, the former factory towns that are now struggling. I think as our colleague from Royal Bank alluded to earlier, I think the difference is that trade remains so important to the Canadian economy and disproportionately so as compared to the American economy, that even workers who have lost their jobs in factories are less inclined to blame trade for it. You know, they're more inclined to blame automation, they're more inclined to blame China, certainly, and less inclined to blame NAFTA. You know, they know that, you know, whatever NAFTA has done, America remains a huge customer. And so I don't think there's a similar sentiment that people have been victimized by this particular deal.
Let's take a call now. Aaron is calling from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi.
Hey, Robert. My comment is the only way that Trump is remotely correct or in the ballpark here is that he's alluding to globalization. Left Reagan and Thatcher and their neoliberal economic doctrine. The answer, I think, is to examine the opening of the financial markets and the end of silo banking, and how capital can now freely move, but as we know, labor cannot. I mean, even in the 2000s, Alan Greenspan, before a congressional committee, said that his success in running the economy came from putting American workers in direct competition with workers overseas. As we know, they are highly exploited.
So if I hear you right, what you're saying is you disagree with the solution that the Trump administration is proposing. You think there's a real problem there?
Correct. I think the problem really is there, but tariffs are not the answer. I mean, NAFTA doesn't even have a large effect on why wages have been stagnant and in the U.S. for the middle class especially.
Aaron, thanks. I want to put this to Heather Long, which is there does seem to be a gap between perceived economic wisdom of things that work and that help us, and public political understanding. I wonder whether, in fact, the policies that 9 out of 10 economists and economic journalists in Washington all think are wise could carry a town meeting in much of the United States.
I think you're spot on. I spent a lot of time in the 2016 election reporting from Michigan and Wisconsin. And what I saw there in a lot of these factory towns is there have been job losses. We know in America there's been about 5 million manufacturing jobs lost since 2000. And when I would go there and I would talk to workers, they would tell me flat out, I would say, well, what do you think the problem is? And 9 out of 10 would say trade. They really felt that NAFTA wasn't a good agreement or some, you know, they didn't know the names of all of them, but they really did point to trade. And what's interesting is in the economic literature, the claim and this many studies have found that the actual bigger job losses are happening because of automation, because of better technology, robots replacing workers in these factories. But there's just such a bigger emotional toll on a town when a factory closes and overnight 700 or 1,000 people lose their job. Yeah. You know, so you're right. There's a big disconnect.
Not to mention the thought that some town in another country has just gotten a factory and a couple of hundred jobs in the process.
That's right. So it's a hard sell. President Trump's message obviously resonated in these places, and it's a hard sell for people who want to defend free trade and who want to try to defend the current system that we have. That said, some quick facts on NAFTA. Those manufacturing jobs, they were lost since 2000. Remember, NAFTA was signed in 1993 and implemented in January 1994. U.S. manufacturing jobs actually increased in the late 90s. It was only after 2000, most people attribute after China joined the World Trade Organization, that's when the United States started to see that decline. So again, is Canada really the problem? The evidence does not point that way.
Let's hear what Lewis has to say. He's calling from... Do I have this right, from Cut Off, Louisiana?
Yes, Robert. How are you?
All right.
Well, I just believe that the Canadians are taking this thing a little too personal. It's strictly business. Trump is trying to protect the American steel and aluminum industries and help America progress. And we've been friends with the Canadians for many, many years. And we'll continue to stand by them. I just believe that they're taking it a little bit too personally. We're simply trying to protect our interests, and we're not singling out Canada. These tariffs aren't just on Canada. It's for the whole industry.
Daniel Dale, what do you say to that?
I think that's a perfectly fair perspective. It was not obvious that upon receiving the news that there would be steel and aluminum tariffs, Prime Minister Trudeau would immediately invoke soldiers dying on the beaches in Normandy. This was a strategic decision that this government made to make this personal and emotional. And I think it's probably largely worked for him. That argument, I've seen, heavy coverage of it in U.S. media, which is not always the case. Canadian governments are often ignored by U.S. media. But I think it's perfectly fair to say, look, this is merely economic. It's not personal. It's not about dead soldiers. So, yeah, I think that makes sense.
Let's turn to David, who's calling from Sarnia, Ontario. David?
Hi, Robert.
Hi.
I just want to make a couple of points, and they're not going to be based on the trade deficit numbers or anything else. And your last caller that said we're taking it too personal, you're right. We are taking it very personal. And to have Mr. Trump say that he's imposing these tariffs because of some national security threat from Canada is absolute nonsense. And what he's doing, really, if you want the truth, he's trying to placate the voters at his base in those states that produce steel and or aluminum. The fact of the matter is, you sold more steel and aluminum to Canada than we sold to you. So let's get our facts straight. And with respect to a Canadian opinion about Mr. Trump's involvement in the G7 in Quebec coming up, quite frankly, I and a lot of my friends here would like Mr. Trump to stay at home, simply because he's going to be disruptive. He's going to usurp the agenda that has really important things on it, like climate and gender equality and women's role in the workplace. To be disrupted by this silly trade whatever so he can get some votes is nuts.
Heather Long, while it does seem unlikely that the six of the G7 will disinvite President Trump, has he succeeded in changing the focus of attention at that summit conference?
Definitely. I mean, that summit was supposed to be focused on issues like female empowerment, issues that were decided months ago. And instead, the only thing that people are going to be talking about is trade and is these latest tariffs. And if I could just throw one more thing in the conversation, I find it really interesting right now to look at what steel workers like the United Steel Workers, the USW Union, are saying about this latest action. And what's fascinating is while groups like the USW, they stood by Trump when he first signed this tariff back in March on steel and aluminum. But if you look, they have actually come out pretty strongly against putting tariffs on Canada. They do not see Canada as a threat. So it's interesting that the industry itself, the same with the Aluminum Metals Association, said the same thing. They came out very strongly against this tariff on Canada.
Is the point of the unions, though, that steel workers don't only make steel, they might also work in industries that use steel, and therefore their jobs would be harmed by the very increase in prices of Canadian imports?
You're right. Some of that's what the Aluminum Association is arguing. They also represent both factories that make raw aluminum and factories that use aluminum in cars or planes or other parts. But the United Steelworkers are representing folks who are just making raw product. But they, again, they just like that caller was saying, they look at the data and they say, wait a minute, you know, United States is selling a lot of metals across the border to Canada as well. They don't see that Canadians as the cause of the oversupply of metals on the global market in the same way that they do with China.
I mean, Daniel Dale, I want to ask you about covering Washington for the Toronto Star these days. I mean, this is a day when, frankly, the only thing that we should be talking about Washington and Canada about is the Washington Capitals' stirring victory their third win for the Stanley Cup. What's it like to be suddenly in a city where Canadian tensions are actually a front page story here, not just for you there?
It's honestly very bizarre. Any time that America or Washington pays attention to Canada, it's very strange to me because usually trade issues are not front and center, and Canada is kind of the boring, easy neighbor to the north. During campaigns, we don't get mentioned. Outside of campaigns, we don't get mentioned. So when people want to talk about tariffs and NAFTA, it's very unusual, and I think it speaks in part to that effort that the Prime Minister's government made to make this personal and emotional and make it about, fundamental questions about the relationship rather than treating it as sort of a low-profile, regular trade dispute.
It has risen to that both north of the border and here as well. It seems to have taken this irritant to a larger scale than we would have assumed.
Absolutely. Yeah, this is, I haven't seen anything like this in my 3 years in Washington. There's been NAFTA coverage. People want to know what's going on. But this is a whole other level of interest and attention.
And by the way, how is NAFTA regarded by Canadians? I mean, is it considered a mixed bag of good and bad and ought to go back to the drawing boards?
No, it's overwhelmingly regarded favorably. There's cross-partisan consensus. We have a Liberal government, obviously. We have a conservative opposition that is very much in favor of NAFTA. It's very much like the Republican Party used to be until the Trump era. So that kind of conservative, free market, pro-trade consensus still holds in Canada because I think there's a broad understanding of its importance to the economy. There is discontent. There isn't 100% approval. Yeah. I think the polls have shown about a 3/4 approval, but that's a far higher approval than we see in the U.S.
And Heather Long, what is this doing to the Republican Party's longstanding commitment to free trade as one of its main policies? Is that weakening in the face of the Trump administration's actions?
It's a huge issue for the Republican Party right now. And in fact, we're seeing it become an issue in the midterm elections. And there's this bizarre situation going on where a number of Democratic candidates for Senate, for instance, actually support Trump's actions on trade, not necessarily against Canada, but broadly speaking. And the Republican candidate who's running for office is against Trump. So it's a very, very odd situation politically for the Republican Party right now. You may have seen, your listeners may have heard, the Koch brothers, longtime GOP funders that dump billions into elections. They are actually running ads against this Trump action on these tariffs.
Heather Long, economics correspondent for The Washington Post. You can find a link to her article, Trump Thinks He's Saving Trade, The Rest of the World Thinks He's Blowing It Up, at our website, onpointradio.org. Heather, thanks for all of your time today.
Thank you.
And Daniel Dale, Washington Bureau Chief for the Toronto Star. You can find a link to his coverage of Trump's tariffs on Canada at our website. Daniel, thanks so much for joining us, too.
Thank you.
And you can continue this conversation and get On Point, the On Point podcast, at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Robert Siegel, and this is On Point.